This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello, and welcome to this second episode of Market Talk for the month of February. In this programme, we'll be looking back at last week's US CPI numbers, we'll be summing up the health of corporate America, and we'll be asking, is the latest stimulus from China enough to kickstart the beleaguered property market? So hosting the call from the UK is me, Frances Watson, and in the investment hot seat and trying to forget about the latest English cricket score for the moment is Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, cricket aside, how are you?
Yeah, actually the cricket has been the major downside for the last couple of weeks, and I'm really unfortunate to have a very good friend who's Indian here who keeps wanting to bet with me on India. So I've been losing Hong Kong dollars as well. Double trouble.
Oh, no, double disaster. All right. Well, look, let's I was going to say let's cheer ourselves up with some inflation figures. But of course, last week we had the US CPI numbers and they were a bit stronger than expected, particularly if you annualize them. Do you think the US economy is running too hot, Ben?
It's funny that when you sort of take a stand back and you look at what the Fed's trying to do here, which is it's got a dual mandate as the Fed. It's got to try and maintain a strong job market, which it's doing. We've said for ages the job market's very strong, so that's good, tick. And then the other thing it's got to try and do is got to try and get inflation back down to target. So it targets PCE inflation, which is the one that we get later. We'll be getting that in a few days' time. Now it's got to get that down to sort of, down to 2.5%, 2%. And in doing that, they have to try and look at all sorts of other types of inflation. The one that we get the earliest and the one that's most like their target is the CPI inflation. As you said, that's running too hot still. So the monthly number that we got for January was up 0.4%. The year-on-year number is up still up about 4%. I mean, if you annualize the 0.4, you get to close to 5, don't you? But the year-on-year number, so versus last January, was up 4%. That's still way above where the target is, if you try and translate it into the core PCE. So if you look at that, you know, why on earth are they talking about cutting interest rates? If anything, yields are too low and they should hike. The reason why they're still talking and investors are still pricing in rate cuts is because it has been coming down over the last few months. So this is potentially just a blip. The interesting thing about January, which I think everyone listening to this will also be able to comprehend, is that people will increase prices sometimes just in January, like an annual a business will just put up a menu, won't they? They only want to print the menu once a year. So they put the prices up once a year, that type of thing. It can happen in January. Maybe that explains some of the increase. And if you think that was a bit of a blip, then we're still on a downward trajectory. The Fed is still happy that they're aiming for their target and they still will be able to cut interest rates. But it has shifted people's perceptions a little bit.
And I suppose it makes next month's inflation figures even more important, because then you'll start to maybe get a trend rather than this could happen, that could happen. But of course, the trend we saw in the UK was better than expected in terms of inflation, lower than expected. And, you know, given I know you always pick me up on your what is the definition of a recession line, but we are apparently technically in a recession. So is it time, do you think, for the UK to get its act together and start cutting rates? Give me some relief on my mortgage, Ben.
Yeah, well, that's. I think that's fair. I think the UK and Europe, mainland Europe, I think, you know, the economy has been weaker, more what you would expect to lead to lower inflation. But frankly, inflation both in the Eurozone and in the UK has also been a bit sticky. So it's not obvious. But it is a little bit clearer for the UK than it is for the US. The US, remember, is really an outlier in terms of global large economies that have done pretty well over the last year. If you take UK, if you take Germany, China, Japan also had this two quarters of negative GDP, which people count, as you say, as a technical recession. But they haven't been doing very well. Although again, to be fair, it's not a dramatic recession, is it? I mean, I think you'd know if it was a proper recession in the UK. It's a lot worse normally than how it feels today. It's a bit more like a stagnation. So everywhere is stagnating apart from the US, which is doing a lot better.
And of course, talking of mortgage rates, I mean, China announced some quite big news, didn't it, early in the week? I think the biggest ever cut to its key mortgage reference rate. You know, given the property sector is in the doldrums, how big an effect will that have?
China has got a very interesting monetary policy framework. So it's got base rates like we talk about for the Federal Reserve in the US or the Bank of England in the UK. So base rates are the rates that banks can borrow at. And then it also sets benchmark rates for different types of lending. So there's a one-year benchmark rate, which is more for sort of corporate lending, and there's a five-year benchmark rate, which is the one that's used for mortgages. So a lot to deal with. They kept all the rates unchanged except for that five-year mortgage benchmark rate, which they cut by 25 basis points. So yeah, it was the biggest that they've done. They generally do by smaller amounts. Still not a huge amount, is it? 25 basis points. The reaction of investors has been, as it has been now for the last few months, a bit of a shoulder shrug, because people are not buying a property in China because mortgages are a bit too high. They're not buying a property in China because they're worried that prices are too high. They're worried about the solvency of developers, whether or not they'll get that property in the end. There's sort of more fundamental reasons behind it. So, like it has been the case for a little while now in China, there's been quite a few small things that each one really don't seem to do the trick. I guess we're all hoping that they all add up to something a little bit more tangible, a little bit bigger. So far, it hasn't led to any discernible increase in activity. But, you know, we wait and see, and we hope that they will add up to something eventually.
Yeah, it feels like they're tinkering at the margin, doesn't it? I mean, right, so what's not tinkering at the margin, in my view, is corporate America, which, as you say, still seems very strong. We had some Walmart figures out last night, Tuesday night, I should say, and great statement seemed to be, didn't it? Now, the biggie, of course, is NVIDIA, which at the time of recording were Wednesday. They're coming out, I think, this afternoon, Ben, or US time. So a bit of nervousness in markets about will they, won't they be able to maintain that fantastic, spectacular, stupendous growth? I don't know. Talk us through it.
We talk about this magnificent seven in the US. I mean, the seven stocks that have been driving markets. They're basically the six biggest companies in the US by market cap. And then Tesla has dropped out of the top seven. It's now the ninth biggest. It hasn't had a great year in terms of performance. But all of them have announced results so far, apart from NVIDIA. So NVIDIA was, I think, a couple of days ago, so just recently, it was the third largest. It's fallen a little bit. It's now, I think, as we are taping, it's the fifth largest, but it moves around a little bit. So incredibly important, massive amounts of performance over the last couple of years. It is, in effect, it's the size of an asset class. So, yeah, really, really important to see what the numbers are. And, yeah, it could swing around after this. I don't want to try and preempt. Could be up, could be down. Walmart, as you say, the reaction to Walmart, and Walmart's very important because we talk about the strength of the US economy, the strength of the US consumer. Walmart is still a massive bricks and mortar retailer. I think it's still the 14th biggest company in the US. So, you know, it's not one to be sniffed at. So they had some good results, which shows you the consumer as well. NVIDIA, of course, is much more related to sales of chips with the AI trend that's been going. That's the main reason why it's done so well. So we'll get a look into the technology sector and where the demands are being for that. So that's just hugely important, that company and all the Magnificent Seven.
I suppose what we're seeing depth and breadth and strength across sectors. You know, we've mentioned two, and is the optimism, is it pervading a lot? I mean, obviously it's got its laggards, but it's pervading a lot of corporate America. Is that fair?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a funny one because we talk about corporate America and then those seven names, the growth in those seven stocks, the growth in earnings just matter disproportionately for the S&P 500. Yeah. So, I mean, we've done some work and we're worried, and I've spoken about on this podcast before, we're worried that earnings growth in the US is potentially going to disappoint because current expectations for this year are that earnings will increase by, let's say, about 10%. That's roughly the number. And we think even if you plug in a soft landing for the US economy, so we get growth, yeah, it's positive, but less than what we had last year, it's going to be difficult for corporate America to earnings to be anything, you know, much more than zero. That's what our models tell us. So 10% is much higher than expected. But for the S&P 500, these companies are so important that if they actually have a good year, you know, they in themselves can generate sort of 3-5% of growth for the S&P 500. And so they make a mockery of all of our models. So that's why I'm saying that these companies can, they are sort of asset classes in themselves, and how they do is really how the S&P will do. But so far this year, the S&P is up a few percent, sort of 4-5% as we're taping today. So is the NASDAQ, more technology related. So is the Euro stocks, though. So, you know, even in Europe, they're up sort of 4-5%. So we've had, it's had a reasonable start of the year everywhere. So focus on those companies. But as you said, more broadly, equity sentiment is pretty good so far this year.
Okay, now talking from equity sentiment, and that brings me nicely on to PMI sentiment, because of course we got some global flash PMI sentiment indicators later on in the week, I think. Nowhere near the COVID lows, obviously, but not really shooting the lights out either. Now, kind of given what you've just said, and okay, it's driven by a handful of stocks, but you know, that huge powerful multiplier effect, does that surprise you?
So the PMIs, I think, have been historically really useful for investors to try and judge sentiment in the business sector, because these are sentiment survey that are taken by purchasing managers, so people who buy stuff. So generally, if they're feeling positive, that's often a good sort of look into the future for how businesses are ordering stuff, and you know, in the future they might start to build more stuff, and that's good for the economy. Hasn't really worked out in COVID. There's a lot of things that COVID have messed up, and one of the things is the usual way that we try and look at how the economy is doing. So there was a flashing recession a year or so ago, particularly the manufacturing sector, which was saying a pretty dismal outlook. But that was because everyone during COVID had already bought their manufactured goods, their exercise bike or whatever, a new computer. They've already bought that. So as soon as COVID reopened, no one was buying those things. So everyone who was making those things were getting very depressed, but everyone was still spending loads of money on the service sector when they were going out restaurants and bars and holidays. So that passing of the baton from manufacturing to service in such an exaggerated way really messed up the way that we try and track the economy. It seems to be settling down now, so hopefully they're going to return to being a bit more useful going forward, because the economy seems to be a little bit more balanced. The goods sector is coming back up now a little bit, and service sector is cooling a little bit, I'd say, and therefore it could be a little bit more useful. But we've had to take them with a pinch of salt. They are getting a bit better. And it is still demonstrating that the US is doing better than a lot of the other parts of the world. I think, you know, we spoke about equity markets doing okay so far, and that so far good economic data has been good for equity markets. There is a tipping point, though, isn't there? If the economic data gets too good, and what I said right at the beginning, the Federal Reserve starts to get a little bit nervous that maybe they shouldn't be cutting interest rates, but I mean, whisper it quietly, but maybe they should even hike interest rates, and that's definitely not what's priced in or expected, but you know, it doesn't take that much. You said before, one more inflation print higher. If the PMIs were really strong, I think if people start to worry that interest rates go up, if yields start to go up, there is a risk that we see a return of last summer's squeeze, where yields go up so much that equity investors get a little bit worried, and we could see another wobble in equity markets. But that's not happened so far. We're halfway there, perhaps something like that. But we need to see a little bit more stronger data before that becomes a bit of a bigger concern.
Yeah, all that certainty around Christmas and the Fed pivot, it seems just an awfully long way away, doesn't it? But look, one thing that we can rely on, because you're intimating that, that the flash PMIs may be a little bit of a false signal at the moment, but one thing we can rely on and always rely on, Ben, is your number. So I guess we're getting towards what? The number for the end of Feb. So what is it and why have you chosen it?
The number is 16%. So this is going back to what we were discussing about economies doing well. So I mentioned sort of on purpose that the US was the only large economy that was doing really well over the last year. The one that I guess some people might have spotted, and maybe I kept it back because of the cricket, is that India, of course, is also a strong economy. It has had a really good year. And 16% is the contribution that the IMF is expecting that India will contribute to global GDP in 2023. We haven't done the final number, so it's still a bit of an estimate. But roughly 16% of global growth in 2023 was India, which is, wow. I think it's pretty remarkable. So India is still a relatively small economy. I mean, it's a huge number of people, but per capita, it's relatively small. So of global GDP, it's only about 3.5% of global GDP. So it's a lot smaller than the US, China. It's even behind Japan and Germany, bigger than the UK. So 3.5% of global GDP, but it has such a massive impact on growth, 16% of growth. So I guess, we're going to have to start talking about it a little bit more in this podcast going forward, I suspect.
Yeah, and of course, good growth, good cricket team. It's a little bit sickening, isn't it? But of course, elections coming up as well in India. So I think we will be talking a lot more about that in the pod. And my next pod, actually, that brings me nicely onto a little plug there, Ben, because that's going to be with the active fixed income team here in the UK. And we are going to talk about India and focus in on that. Well, from India to Hong Kong, and to thank you once again for all your insights, and to thank all our listeners for listening. And we'll speak soon. Take care, Ben.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.